Hey, this is Len Casper, the TV voice of the Chicago Cubs. You're listening to the Friendly Confines podcast with Chad and Ryan.
Rhino, buddy, are you ready for summer camp?
Chad, I've been ready for the last 3 months. I want to hear the crack of the bat. I want to hear the ball hitting the mitts. I want baseball back, and it's finally here. I couldn't be more excited.
It's here, and the new episode is here. We're so excited about it. We're going to be talking about players that we're really looking to have an impact this year, players that we think might have a sneaky, important role. We're going to talk about the implications of COVID and its effect on what's coming up. And dare I say, Rhino, do we have our biggest guest of all time?
I mean, it's arguably safe to say that, Chad, from the Marquee Sports Network, the voice of the Chicago Cubs on television, entering his 16th season. It is Len Casper who is going to join us and give us a preview of the 2020 season. You don't want to miss a single minute. So stick around, because the Friendly Confines starts right now. First inning now, Chad, and man, it is exciting, because on Wednesday, the players will report for summer camp, as they're calling it, spring training, as the Chicago Cubs get ready to get set for the 2020 season and the 60-game season that will be in 2020. I am just so happy that sports is finally returning, that we're going to see some semblance of baseball once again, and that we can get this season started after all the acrimony, after all the back and forth. We're finally able to see players live in action again and not have to rely on watching old baseball games. This is going to be exciting. This is going to be fun. I'm cautiously optimistic that this season will be successful with all the changes, but I'm just happy everybody is back right now. What are you looking forward to on Wednesday the most?
You know, just knowing that it's back. I mean, it's been about 130 days since spring training started. You know, the pandemic was announced about 110, 111 days ago. Opening day was supposed to be about 100 days ago. So, I mean, that's a good portion of the year that we should have had baseball. And so for me, like you, just the fact that it's going to be run and we don't know. I think I'm with you. I am a little bit more pessimistic about it running all the way through. But for me, it's about, you know, the excitement of the sound of the ball against the bat, the ball against the leather, and knowing that the Cubs are going to be stepping on the field. I mean, even with all the uncertainty, there's just this really incredible opportunity to take back the national spotlight. You know, the Cubs haven't had that. Baseball hasn't had that with all the negotiations and all the issues. I mean, let's keep in mind, Ryan, the NHL, the NBA, they have not resumed yet. So if the baseball can figure this out, if they can do it in a way, they could capture the hearts and minds and definitely the attention of a yearning fan base and even a new fan base that wants to see live sports.
Yeah, 100%. And I do believe, like you said, that people are just chomping at the bit, and all the things that people were upset about when they didn't think there was even going to be a season, all is probably forgiven with fans, because they just want to be able to watch baseball at this point. And I think you're going to have that much more of an appreciation for the games once they get started. So let us move on to the second inning now. And Jed Hoyer, the general manager of the Cubs, announced that two members of the organization tested positive for COVID, so they will be held back. As you know, we knew that there would be positive tests, whether it's from people in the organization or players in the organization. Right now, no players have tested positive. Let's knock on wood for that. And this just continues that narrative, Chad, as we've been talking about the entire time, just the concern and how we're going to handle positive cases when it comes to these players and when they get back on the field. Now, Yu Darvish, who is one of the more vocal players who was concerned about potentially not playing, has said he is going to be in camp. Anthony Rizzo is going to be in camp. So far, at the recording of this show, we do not have any Cubs players that have said they are going to opt out, much like there have been a few players in Major League Baseball that have said they're not going to play, or any high-risk players or coaches. I mean, that includes John Lester, who's a cancer survivor as well. He's going to be in camp too. So something to hang your hat on here, that it seems like as of now, the core players for this team are going to be in camp and for the season, you know, throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah. And I think the narrative is going to continue to evolve. I think we're going to have updates even this week, you know, after we set this to record. I think we're going to have more and more names that are going to come on board, that are the decisions made for family, decision made because this is such a unique time. I know people really felt like this was all about billionaires and millionaires fighting, but there was such a huge health and safety component to this. And that's going to be an underlying issue. That's going to be a pall over the entire start of the season as it runs through. You know, I've told you my biggest worry, my biggest concern, and I always use the Yankees as my example because I don't want it to happen to the Cubs, but you know, let's say three core members of the Yankees all of a sudden test positive. What, do they just pull their team, you know, or because they have to sit out and be quarantined? I mean, how is that going to work if you have an outbreak on a team? You know, the NFL, the Bears, for instance, offering a full refund to any season ticket holder who wants it. So they're already thinking ahead to the possibilities. Teams are pushing back to start the date of the NFL season. And, you know, nationwide and globally, the COVID numbers continue to climb. There really is no end in sight. So for this 60-game season to happen after summer camp, all the way through the playoffs, ending, you know, in October, everything has to be perfect. Everyone has to be perfect. And somehow the infections have to completely avoid the bubble that is going to be Major League Baseball. So, again, I'm very hopeful, but we have to realize the risk is going to be very strong, and it's how are they going to address it when and if it happens?
Yeah, I mean, listen, do I think teams are going to pull out? I don't. I think it's just going to be players are going to go on the IR, and they're going to continuously test players every single day to make sure that they're not testing positive. And if they do, they're not going to be able to play. And then they're going to have to self-quarantine for 2 weeks, and they're going to have to bring somebody up or – you know, bring someone in, I guess is the better way of putting it, to, you know, replace that person on the roster. You know, I mentioned John Lester. He's a cancer survivor. Anthony Rizzo, also a cancer survivor. So another high-risk player there. Yeah, I mean, listen, we know that there's going to be players that are going to test positive along the way. There's no way that there is not going to be a single player this season that doesn't test positive throughout the year. And to your point, it's just a matter of how does Major League Baseball handle that if we start to see one, two, three players testing positive, and then how do you quarantine that team to make sure that they stay safe? I have a hard time believing you're going to pull a team from the season.
Yeah, but I mean, Rhino, if four guys, five guys, core guys from a team go down, you know, does that cheapen and does that affect everything in a really, you know, in a catastrophic way? So
We know this season is going to be different anyway. We know that this season is not going to be a normal season. So, you know, when we talk about, you know, records, or we talk about the World Series champion, I mean, this whole season, as far as I'm concerned, is going to have an asterisk next to it. Like, we've already talked about that, right?
Yeah.
So if four core guys go down, I mean, we know that could be a possibility. So it's just going to be a play on scenario where we just say, just you got to keep the train running. That's really what it boils down to, I feel like. So let us move on to the third inning now, Chad. And summer camp consisting of 60 players, 39 of them headed to Wrigley Field, 11 headed to South Bend, with 10 spots that are still open for the remaining 60 players. So just to break it down for everybody and kind of how this is all going to work, the way that it's going to be is, the first 2 weeks of the season, you're going to have a 30-man roster. Then the following 2 weeks, it goes down to a 28-man roster. And then the rest of the season after that, for the following 2 weeks, you have 28. Then, like I said, the rest of the year, it's a 26-man roster, and that goes throughout the postseason. So we kind of have an idea at this point who the locks are, Chad. I think it's a matter of well, how does the rest of the roster fill out for this team? Because without really any major changes on this roster, we kind of know already, for the most part, you know, what this team is going to look like.
Yeah, and you know, when I really think about the players that I'm focused on, that I'm really looking at, that I'm excited to see what they're going to be able to show here in summer camp and then leading into the season, you know, I'm going to pick a couple pitchers. Tyler Chatwood, I mean, he had such a high ceiling coming into spring, so much to prove, and he was looking to take over one of those spots in the starting rotation after he had done some incredible work in the long relief role. But then for me also, Craig Kimbrell. I mean, this is the guy that really, after the clunker of the season he had last year, and especially that miserable end to that Cardinal game in the last home series, you know, what can he do? What does he have in the tank? What can he show this team? Because he has a lot to prove. On the offensive and defensive side of it, you know, what I'm really excited about, Ryan, and I'm going to throw out just a couple names, Javier Baez and Wilson Contreras, what can they do knowing that they can put their foot on the gas for 60 games? What can they do? Because those are guys, when they're on a hot streak, they are incredible. I can't wait to see what they can do on an offensive talent-specific area where they are focused on stepping into that batter's box and hitting for average, hitting for power, and showing, you know, with Javi, his age 27 season, that is typically the prime of most players' careers. This is Javi's shortened age 27 season. He has a lot to prove coming off that MVP, near MVP showcase.
Yeah, I guess for me, the two guys that I would probably look at, one is Jason Kipnis. Obviously, once upon a time, you know, this guy was a player to, you know, be reckoned with when it came to, you know, one of the best second basemen maybe in the American League. Young up-and-coming player from the Chicagoland area, grew up in Northbrook, went to Glenbrook North High School. So he's happy to be home. He was a Cubs fan when he was growing up as a kid. And for me, I think Craig Kimbrell has a lot to prove, Chad. I think we can both agree on that. I mean, this was a guy everybody wanted signed, sealed, and delivered. The Cubs followed through on that, and he just absolutely fell apart. He wasn't healthy, but just not the pitcher that everyone thought they were signing up for.
A lot to prove.
And I hope that he can come back and kind of prove people wrong, because when Craig Kimbrell is on, there's no question he's one of the best pitchers, or rather one of the best closers in baseball. So, you know, for me, I'm curious to see how those two guys are going to be, because if Kipnis can be, you know, a solid second baseman for this team, which was obviously a big question all of last year, you know, after Zobrist went down, is who is going to consistently play second base. And if the Cubs can get, you know, like I said, Kimbrell to be that closer that they've needed, you know, I think we could be talking about a team that is going to be really competitive and really maybe play a role in the postseason if these guys, you know, can contribute some major points for this team throughout the summer.
I agree.
Yeah. So let's move on now to the fourth inning, Chad. And with that being said, are there any surprises that you think when you look at this roster and say, you know, no one's talking about this guy, but maybe this is somebody that who could turn some heads and make something happen should they make the team?
It's interesting you listed Kipnis. You know, he's not even on the 40-man roster at this point. So he's one of those that I'm not sure where he fits if everything falls into play. He's such a great feel-good story. But is there room for them? You know, what I was excited about in the spring was, you know, a healthy Daniel Descalso, which I know that sounds hilariously silly after the year he had last year, but he was plagued by wrist issues all of last year. He has a lot to prove. He has a big contract, and he does want to take over that second base role. And the other question is, where does that leave Nico Hoerner? I mean, is this a guy that how are they going to force him into such a shortened season? Are they just going to make him the show, or are they going to give him small bits and pieces along the way? And then the other piece of the puzzle is, are we over Albert Almora and his role in center field? And are we going to see Steven Souza? Because they had big hopes for him, and he was also having a really big spring. So those are some of the lesser guys by name that I'm really excited to see how they step up. Because if this team is going to go on a run, if they are going to excel, It's not going to be the guys we all know. It's going to be some surprises along the way. They're going to propel them to what could be a really exciting year.
Yeah, for me, I got pitchers that I would be looking at. For one, it's Dylan Maples, who I think is a guy who has the potential to really be a just knockout pitcher. This guy throws hard. He's a big guy. Certainly someone who I think, you know, if he's able to make an impact on this team, you know, again, young pitcher, I think he might be someone down the line or hopefully this year that could potentially be someone that could, you know, really give the Cubs an added boost. The other person I would be looking at is Jeremy Jeffries, the free agent pitcher that they signed. He will make the roster, came off an injury last year, but this is a guy who I think the Cubs are really looking at to be a setup man for Kimbrel or could potentially be a closer depending on how Kimbrel responds this year. So he's someone else that I'm keeping an eye on to see how ultimately he's going to look, you know, since he's come off the IR and now he's trying to kind of get back into that playing shape and really kind of reinforce what he was able to do when he was in Milwaukee. So let us move on now to the fifth inning, Chad. And it's already been announced by manager David Ross that the Cubs are going to have that 1-2 punch with Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo batting 1 and 2 this year going into the season. So it's interesting because the leadoff spot was also another area where the Cubs struggled between, you know, Kyle Schwarber or Jason Hayward or Anthony Rizzo when he would lead off. People obviously thought Rizzo was probably their best leadoff hitter, but I kind of think this is interesting. Listen, you got your two top hitters at the top of the lineup to set the table. And that's going to allow someone like Javi and then Contreras to, you know, give them the extra effort to, you know, bring them home. Why not give it a shot, right? I mean, I know that in the past when you're talking about leadoff hitters, you're thinking about guys who, you know, get on base, steal bases. But we both know the game of baseball has changed dramatically. And the days of having a speedy guy at the top of the lineup is not as big of an issue or an impact that you need, as opposed to just a guy who can get on base or even hit a home run to start a game, because we know how the game has changed so much throughout that time. Yeah. So I kind of like this move by Ross with the Brizzo 1-2 punch in the beginning of the lineup. What do you ultimately feel about that when you see those two hitting first and second?
This just to me shows there's a new guard, there's a new leader, there's a new manager, and there was a lot of feedback that the inconsistency of the lineup, not really knowing what your role was and being moved around. I mean, I still play ball, albeit at a much different level, but it's nice to know your role and you show up knowing your role. And so if Bryant knows that's his role and Rizzo knows that he's after that as a role, I mean, what I like is what you kind of shared is like you've got this embarrassment of riches. So if those two guys are 1-2 and you've got Contreras and Javi and right there and Schwarber, I mean, that's one heck of a start to a lineup, no matter how you slice and dice them. So I like the consistency and knowing that they're going to be in that role and they understand what their role is. I'm not sure if it's going to last, but again, this is a sprint season, and I think this is an opportunity to kind of redefine what could be possible from a 1-2 batter. And, you know, what I like about both of them is they make contact. What I like about both of them is they're disciplined hitters. What I like about both of them is, you know, unlike a Javi Baez, there's not a lot of three pitch at bats with those two. So an opportunity to work a pitcher and see a lot of pitches. And as you said, I mean, it's going to be pretty exciting for the first time when there's a Brizzo back-to-back homer to start the game.
Yeah, absolutely right. So you mentioned earlier about some pitchers that we were potentially looking at to see if they would be able to make that big impact as we move to the sixth inning. And certainly the rotation is going to have to be, you know, important for this team to succeed this year. And there's been some chatter about maybe it would benefit this team to go from a 5-man rotation to a 6-man rotation. So we're looking at Darvish 1, Hendricks 2, Lester 3, Quintana 4. Then we're looking at possibly that's where we decide. Like, is Alec Mills your 5 guy? And then, you know, who do you go with for your 6th starter at that point? Like, what do you decide to do? Is Tyler Chatwood your number 6? I mean, who do you think ultimately is the guy? And do you think that is the right move for this team to decide and say, you know what, maybe for the first few weeks of the season, because we are knowing that these guys are only going to be able to pitch 4 or 5 innings tops, maybe to just kind of get them a little more rested, we go with that 6-man rotation. You on board with that?
Well, I'm going to go at it from a different angle, and I'm going to speak to everybody that is up in arms and is furious about the designated hitter. I'm going to speak to everybody that's up in arm about the extra inning rule of a runner on second to start every extra inning game until the playoffs. You know, here's what that means. Here's what that means is we've got the flexibility, the Cubs have the flexibility of a lineup now where they don't have to burn pitchers. And I think you're going to be strong. You're going to see stronger pitchers. I mean, you mentioned Jeffries. There's a guy coming off an injury. He got an extra 100 days to recover. John Lester getting older. You know, he's in his last year before either the opt out or the Cubs contract. He's got an extra 100 days, you know, to, again, stay healthier. So what I think you're going to see is kind of a different mechanism when it comes to pitching. So it could be a 6-man rotation. They could go 7-man, you know, if they've got a hot hand and they want to give somebody an opportunity like Maples to come up and see what he has. You could start with openers, have closers come in. I mean, I think all bets are off when it comes to the pitching position. You're not going to see the double switches anymore because you don't have to with the designated hitter. You know, Cubs fans are going to get used to not thinking through burning pitchers and knowing that you've used somebody for a pitcher here or there, or the final out of one inning, and we're not going to see him for a couple games. Now, I think you're going to see pitchers at a stronger strength, more full strength, and no matter who you put in there. I mean, if you're asking me for who I think with a sixth person would be, I still think my money's on Chatwood to prove something this year. But I just think it's going to be such an interesting dynamic. It's going to be, as I said before, a sprint. And it's going to be a sprint with some really strong arms all the way through.
Time now for the seventh inning stretch here on the Friendly Confines. We are so excited for baseball to be back, and we are even more excited for our guest this week. You know him, you hear him, you watch him. He is the voice of the Chicago Cubs on the Marquee Network on your TV. It is Len Casper, who is joining us here on the seventh inning stretch of the Friendly Confines. Len, welcome to the program with Chad and Ryan. How are you doing? And thank you so much for being with us.
You got it, Ryan. Chad, happy to be with you guys and talking a little baseball here as summer has officially started, and hopefully baseball is right around the corner.
Yeah, for sure. Well, with that being said, Len, let's start right there. What are your initial thoughts about baseball being back and how the season is being laid out?
Well, it's going to be a fascinating journey to get through the 2020 season, as is the case in every facet of life, really around the world. Is the virus will dictate whether or not we can get this thing going and completed. I really appreciate how Major League Baseball has tackled the health and safety protocols. It's incredibly detailed. It looks as though it's pretty stringent. Look, you know, telling baseball players not to spit and even to high five, that may be difficult to do in the heat of the battle or not to do because they're routine oriented. But I do think that a lot of the things that'll happen in and around the ballpark and the clubhouse and on the field and in the dugouts before and after the games will help immensely. And, you know, there is some personal responsibility on everybody's part to make sure we're as safe as possible. But I think the bottom line is everybody wants to see baseball back. And I cannot wait to get in the booth with Jim DeShays and get on Marquee Sports Network in the first year of its launch. There's so many great people there. We've been waiting impatiently for the last several months to get regular season baseball underway. And finally, it looks like it's going to happen.
So good to talk to you, Len. It's Chad here. And I've had those concerns about health and safety. And it's one of the things I've thought about is, do you feel confident that once this gets started, do you think this will go through with that, without players being lost, without maybe even teams being lost or even the league halting?
I don't really have a strong opinion on that because so many things have been out of our control, and so many things have changed on a dime this year on the health front that, you know, it's really, really difficult to predict the future. I'm hopeful that we can get through this, and I think everybody is. And as I said, I think some of it comes down to personal responsibility. Probably most of it is just a lot of luck, and we've had some bad luck in some areas of the country regionally here lately. We seem to be, knock on wood, doing better in Chicago and Illinois. So those are good signs. But, you know, I trust people who are a lot smarter than I am and who have been right in the middle of all of this to try to figure out how to do it. They seem confident we can do it. So I take them at their word. And as I said, I'm very much looking forward to getting back in the booth and calling games, however they will look.
Yeah, well, I was just going to follow up with that, Len, and with you having your first year, as you mentioned, with the Marquee Sports Network. What do you think that will look like? I know you're not going to be traveling with the team. What will that experience be like for you doing games from wherever you may be doing the games this year?
Yeah, it's going to be unique, unprecedented in a lot of ways. We won't be recreating games necessarily from a different site like they used to back in the 20s, 30s, 40s when they didn't travel. But, you know, doing a game off the monitor is something I've never done. And we're going to have to have a pretty quick learning curve here. We'll have some fun with it. I think people understand the situation here, that the health and safety of everyone involved is paramount. They just want to see baseball. And, you know, we'll try to make it as comfortable as we can. Technologically, Marquee Sports Network is doing some amazing things. I don't know all of the things we're going to be able to do, but just a few of the things I saw in spring training and what we hope to do are going to be pretty cool. And just the people are so great, and they've worked so hard and diligently to get this thing off the ground. They deserve to have baseball on its airwaves, and it's going to happen.
And I'm so blown away. I mean, you talk about the Herculean effort to get a network off the ground, and then you lose all your programming. And what the Marquee Network has done has been pretty amazing to fill that time, knowing that they were going to have highlights and games every day. So when you think about the Marquee Network, what are you most excited about?
Just about everything, really. As I said, I think it starts with the people. And you know, I could name everybody at the network. I know, but it would take a long time because they've hired a lot of amazing people. But it's really the quality of people, starting with the general manager, Mike McCarthy, Mike Santini, the executive producer. Their resumes are incredibly impressive. I think there's a balance that they have struck really well with giving you kind of a hyper Cubs local pinpoint focus on this team, but also giving it kind of a national feel technologically and in terms of its presentation. So I really anticipate giving Cubs fans kind of the best of all worlds in that it is a local / regional telecast specifically for Cub fans. But I think they're going to really enjoy how it looks and sounds and feels. And I've always been of the mindset that even if you're not a diehard Cub fan, or God forbid you're rooting for the team the Cubs are playing against, that you still will enjoy what we do. You know, we try not to turn people away no matter who they're rooting for, but obviously this is going to be a great thing for Cubs fans. It's a 24-hour network, and I think people mostly want to see the games, and that's why this is a big deal that a 60-game schedule is on the way. But, you know, a lot of it we're going to navigate through together for the first time, and it's really cool to be part of a startup like this.
Len, you're entering, I want to say, year 16 as the voice of the Chicago Cubs on TV. When you think about that, does that mean anything to you? And knowing that, I want to say that's the same amount of time Harry had the mic with the Cubs. I know you're very quick to, you know, you don't want to obviously compare yourself to Harry or Jack or anything like that. But just knowing you've been having that longevity with this organization, does that number mean anything to you?
Well, I'm honored to be here, and every day it goes by, whether it's, you know, 16 days, 16 weeks, months, years. It is hard to believe that I've been here that long. My son is 19, and basically, you know, most of his life has been spent in Chicago. This is our home. So I think that's number one. And I feel very much a part of the Cubs family, not only with the team, with the new network, but with the fans in general. And when people say that I am a part of their daily life, in terms of 3 to 4 hours a day, my voice is pumped into their household. I don't take that lightly. The responsibility is precious. It's special. And it's something I never take for granted. And I'm just, you know, so excited to be here and, you know, looking forward to what could be a really intriguing baseball season.
It's going to be so unique with the shortened season and just being within the central region, and even with interleague play, just the central region. When you think about, let's get into the gameplay, what are you most looking forward to this season with the collection of players that are really in a lot of the cases in the prime of their careers? What do you foresee for this team that has kind of ran out of gas the last couple of years towards the end, but under new leadership and new marching orders? What do you think is the prospects for this young group of talent?
I think it's almost impossible to predict what a team's record will look like in such a short season. I believe it's 37% of what a normal 162 would look like. It's possible the best team in the division, in any division, might not even make the playoffs because of a bad 5 to 10 game stretch. That happened to the Cubs last year, as you know, when they lost 9 in a row in September and kind of ended the season with a thud. And now with a new manager here, but a very similar looking roster, I do think they come in with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. The thing I'm most interested in, to more specifically address your question, is what the quality of play will look like and how games with no fans or very limited amount of fans and how that affects the players on the field. I'm very curious to see, you know, who will really step up and if it negatively impacts other guys who really seem to feed off the energy of the moment. In a lot of ways, guys, they're going to have to supply their own energy, especially if they have to socially distance from their teammates, you know, no high-fiving and things like that. I could see some guys being a little out of sorts, and if you get into a slump, that could really get in your head. So that's the thing that I'm most interested in terms of a 60-game, you know, pandemic major league season, is just what it looks like, what it sounds like, what it feels like, you know, runner at second in extra innings, how strategically managers are going to play that. There are just a million really intriguing angles that we'll tackle on a daily basis.
Well, Len, you bring up a great point about that with players trying to get themselves kind of, you know, pumped up, so to speak. There's chatter that potentially maybe teams would bring in crowd noise. Is that something that you think teams could potentially consider, to just give the players that kind of ambiance and experience to feel like there's people there? Would that make sense?
I don't know the answer to that. I suppose, you know, Major League Baseball could allow teams to do whatever they want, or they could simply say, nobody's doing it or everybody can do it. I don't know the answer to that. I know that there've been some soccer telecasts that have had fake crowd noise pumped in. I've heard rumors about the NFL maybe doing it. I don't know exactly how we're going to handle it and whether that would simply be a TV thing or actually would be heard in the ballpark. I'm only speaking for myself. My gut tells me that the start of it would be as natural as possible. And the other part is, you know, as a fan, the opportunity to hear what guys are saying on the field is unprecedented, as I said earlier. So to pump in crowd noise and to not be able to hear some things that we normally wouldn't almost feels like a missed opportunity. So I'm kind of looking forward to hearing some of that chatter on the field with the lack of crowd noise and just kind of play through that and see how it feels.
So there's going to be a couple rule changes that we knew the minimum batters face for relief pitchers, but what do you think, what's your take on, you touched on it a second ago with the runner on second for extra innings, obviously a health and safety measure to make sure there's not any 16 or 17 inning games. What do you think about that, the DH, because that obviously is lighting up social media right now?
Well, the DH thing was going to happen at some point anyway, and it just was fast-tracked because of the circumstance. I'm not losing sleep over it. I do prefer the National League style of play, but I had come to accept that the DH would be universal, and it should be, because, or at least the rules should be the same with all of the interleague play. The Cubs will spend a third of their schedule this year playing American League clubs. So, yeah, I think the Cubs are one of those teams that should benefit from the DH, because they do have some guys you'd like to get that bat in the lineup. I just don't like the... I'm not going to fight it. It will be exciting. It will create a lot of discussion about what a manager might want to do strategically. I would have preferred a 12-inning cap on games, and if it ends in a tie, so be it. But ties are something most people don't like anymore, so I understand that I'm a bit of a dinosaur with that idea in mind. So it is what it is, as the kids say, and away we go. You know, they're not going to do the runner at second and extras in the postseason, so that's the best news. And you know, I'm a big hockey fan. I don't like shootouts, so any gimmick you use in overtime or extra innings, typically I would shy away from. But you know, we're in an unprecedented moment, so you got to try some stuff.
Len, I'm going to take you back for a second. I'm sure you've been asked this question, but I don't think I know the answer. Is there a favorite game in your 16-year career with the Cubs that you've called that stands out, or that kind of holds a special place in your heart more than any other?
Oh, there are a bunch. I would think the first home game against the Brewers back in 2005. I had worked at Wrigley previously, but never in the home booth. That was a pinch-me moment. I think it was opening day 08. The Cubs actually lost the game in extra innings, but Kosuke Fukudome,
yep,
in his Cubs debut, hit a three-run homer in the ninth to tie it. I think of the Aramis Ramirez walk-off against Milwaukee in 07. That kind of propelled Lou Piniella's club to a division title that year. The Carlos Zambrano no-hitter in Milwaukee. A lot of Milwaukee connections against the Astros. in 08, the Chris Bryant three-homer, two-double game in Cincinnati, Jake Arrieta's second no-hitter in Cincinnati. There are a million of them, but a lot of them have been here in the last few years, and probably too many to name. And then just being there for Game 7 in Cleveland, even though I only did one inning of radio that night, being on the field interviewing the Cubs after they won their first World Series in 108 years was something I'll never forget.
Yeah, the moniker "lovable losers," we can say that's been parked. That is no longer the case. How do you feel? I know Ryan earlier asked you, in you know, about your 16-year career, but I would take it in a different way. You are here right now at a time, such a special time in Cubs history. Tell us just about, you know, does that hit you that you were able to be a part of this ascension, and what does that mean for you to know that this is an organization that is really investing in winning now?
Oh, for sure, it's special. You know, I think you get spoiled when teams are good, and when the team is bad, it feels like they're never going to get good again. And how quickly did it change in 2015? You know, the Cubs had a pretty long stretch of losing baseball, and then all of a sudden they caught fire in 15, and then a year later win the World Series. They haven't had a losing season since 14 was the last time the Cubs had a losing record. And, you know, I don't take that for granted. I appreciate all the good years, even the years in which the Cubs struggle. I still get a lot of enjoyment out of those seasons just because I love the game so much. And we only have a finite amount of time on this planet as it is. And to sit back and, you know, be upset that you're calling big league games for a team that isn't winning. I mean, every game I call is a ton of fun, but it's a heck of a lot more fun when your team is really good. And I will never tell a fan how to behave or how to treat his or her team. I would just say, as frustrating as it can be when things don't go well, I really hope, and I think that's the case, that Cubs fans get as much enjoyment as they can out of the good times, because it doesn't last forever. It is fleeting. And all of a sudden, if you have a really bad year, you know, you have to have that balance of completely enjoying those years that are really good. I know everyone got a ton of joy out of 2016. 2017 was frustrating because of the way it ended, but that was still a really good year. They got back to the National League Championship Series. 18 was frustrating in that long extra inning game in the wild card. The Cubs didn't win. And then the 9 in a row in September last year was a real, you know, shot to the gut that ended up ending Joe Maddon's Cubs career. Now he's moved on, but that's what makes the good time special, right? You have to have the ebb and the flow and the good and the bad. If it's all just good, it would be like being a Patriots fan. And then all it is win, 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 win. And there's a point where if they lose a game, you know, you feel like your entire world has been taken away. That's not how most fans of most teams kind of view the world. And so, yes, it's been incredible here, and I don't take any of it for granted.
Len, we'll let you go on this. I know you were a part of the Hot Stove Cool Music event. It was a little different this year, but you were a big part of that. Go ahead, talk a little bit about what that was all about and how you were involved.
Yeah, it's a great two times a year event, one in Chicago, one in Boston. We were unable to host in Chicago this year. It would have been last weekend when the Red Sox came to which behind the scenes I know was incredibly difficult and challenging to put together, but it was an amazing night. Performances from Common, Steven Tyler, James Taylor, my band, The 45, made up of a bunch of Chicago All-Stars. We debuted our first single, and Joel Murray got to intro the band. Sunshine Boys, another great Chicago band. Mike O'Malley was the host. Theo was involved. Peter Gammons. Bernie Williams played guitar. It was Bronson Arroyo, the former pitcher, has a great band. So it was a wonderful night. I don't have the final total of how much money was raised for Theo's foundation to be named later, but it's going to be a lot of money. And this was the most important event we've had to date, just because there's a lot of need around the world with what everybody's going through right now. And all of the money goes to great efforts in both the Boston and Chicago communities, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
That's fantastic. Len Casper, our guest here on the seventh inning stretch. Of course, you can see him on the Marquee Sports Network, the longtime play-by-play announcer for the Cubs. Also, don't forget, Chad, he has a podcast too, Open Concession.
Fantastic
with Len
podcast.
And JD. He's got great fantastic. They've had Joel Murray on. They've had a lot of great guests. Fergie Jenkins, Billy Williams. They get a big names, a lot of big names on that program too. So check it out as well. Hey Len, we cannot thank you enough for the time. You have been more than absolutely, you know, appreciative of your time. And we really thank you. Best of luck this 2020 season. We would love to have you back on the show whenever your schedule allows. Thank you so much for being with us.
Ryan and Chad, I appreciate you having me on. Let's enjoy a fun baseball season.
Thanks, Len.
You got it.
Thanks, guys.
Our thanks to Len Casper for joining us on.
How fun was that?
Evening stretch. Man, that was exciting, man. That was great.
Yeah,
really a lot of fun. Such a gentleman Len is, and
class.
Of course you can find him on Twitter at Len Casper, and you can find him on the Marquee Sports Network, which will be showing the Cubs games all season long, and you can watch him and JD. And of course we mentioned his podcast, Open Concessions. Make sure to check out that episode. He's got Kerry Wood.
So, yeah, so, and you know, such good guest, Rhino, and you know, I want to share with the listeners. I mean, you know, we've had some blockbuster guests. We've had people walk off the Sports Center desk and come right onto our show. We've had Carl Ravitch, we've had Joe Buck, we've had our great friend of the show, Mark Silverman, Dave Kaplan. We had the late Chet Kopic. I mean, we've had so many great guests. We've got coming up, we're really proud to share with you in the coming weeks. We've got new marquee talent, who also you probably know from the NFL on Fox, Chris Myers, and then also Pat Hughes. Both of them, listen for them in the coming weeks.
Yeah, Pat Hughes, your birthday friend.
Yes.
Who, you know, sends you sweet messages on your birthday. So that's
my dream guest.
That's right. That's right. We finally have gotten your dream guest. So we are just going to continue to try and roll in big names for everybody. And of course, if you want to, you know, discuss with us about all things Cubs related, talk to us about the episode, ask us about guests that you would like to hear. You can find us on social media. Go to at Ryan D. Lieber. That's my handle. You can go to at the Chad Gordon. That's, of course, Chad's handle. And don't forget about our Facebook page, the Chicago Cubs Friendly Confines Facebook page. It's got a whole list of things that Chad and I post on there, including the podcast that you can check out. But certainly we love interacting with all of our listeners.
So much
and
fun.
Wanting to hear from you allows us to kind of recognize what we need to be talking about on a week in and week out basis. So, of course, check us out there. And with that, Chad, let us move on to the eighth inning. As we mentioned, the Marquee Network. And, of course, big, big news when it came to this network was how many people were going to be able to view the Marquee Network on the different cable networks. They had different contracts with some of the networks and the cable outlets in the Chicagoland area, but the biggest one was Comcast, and the Marquee Network did not have a contract with them. They still do not. However, Crane Kenny, the Cubs president, came out and said that they are very close to a deal with Comcast, and it should be done before the season starts. So fans, everyone who is nervous or concerned, it looks like that this will all come together, and do not fear, because everyone will be able to watch Marquee in the Chicagoland area if you do have Comcast. It appears a deal is imminent and it will happen soon enough. Do you feel relieved by this, Chad?
I'm not. I honestly, Ryan, I could care less. And obviously I'm not a part of the vocal minority online. People, it's just amazing how people have been fretting over this Marquee decision for the longest time. It's all going to work out. The vast majority of people have cable. Comcast has the best negotiating power. And right now it behooves everybody to get baseball on to the network. The Cubs right now, because of the fact there is no live sports, they will have a ratings juggernaut when they start producing games, and Comcast is going to want to show the Marquee Network. And for the people that haven't had a chance to see all the great programming they've been doing, you know, while not having baseball the last 3 months, you're going to be incredibly surprised. You're going to enjoy the product. You know, as Lynn said in the interview, their goal was to obviously cater to the Cubs fan, but they would want a sports fan who stumbled on the station to go, this is good stuff. This is like network caliber stuff. And that's what I'm excited about. We've never had that. As much as people have harkened back and been sad about the demise of the WGN years, that has been so long ago. They have not been on over-air WGN for years and years and years. You didn't know if they were going to be on Comcast Sportsnet, or if they're going to be on WLS, or, you know, where they were going to be. And now we all know they're going to be on the Marquee Network, and that allows them to put a really good product on the air. I'm excited it's finally happening. If only we can stop hearing people complain online.
Yeah, I mean, I knew eventually it was going to happen.
Yeah.
I'm relieved that it is going to happen, because I think, look, it's important. Especially when you're a new network, you want to roll it out to the fans to be able to see it the first game of the year. And the fact that, you know, they were struggling in the beginning, I think some people were a little concerned about that, because unfortunately we have seen that with other teams as it relates to their cable networks. You know, the Dodgers have had issues with that for a while. So I just think a lot of people did not want to see that.
Same situation. Absolutely.
The same situation, yeah. as they move on from that. So let us move on now to the ninth inning, Chad. And wow, it's amazing. The 100th anniversary of the Negro Leagues. What a legacy that, you know, these players left, and Major League Baseball is going to be celebrating that, as they are already. The former presidents, with Barack Obama, George Bush, Bill Clinton, all involved in this celebration.
Don't forget Jimmy Carter.
And Jimmy Carter, of course. Yes, we cannot forget about Jimmy Carter. But no, I mean, when you think about what this league represented and the players who obviously came out of that, you, of course, think of Jackie Robinson when you think of the most obvious player to come out of there. But, you know, once upon a time, Hank Aaron played in the Negro Leagues. You know, I mean, there were so many guys. Ernie Banks played in the Negro Leagues. Willie Mays played in the Negro Leagues.
Yeah.
And then you got the guys who never got the opportunity to play in Major League Baseball, but these were guys that probably could have been some of the greatest Major League Baseball players of all time, like a Josh Gibson, or even though he, you know, cool Papa Bell, Buck Leonard. I mean, and then you got guys like Satchel Paige, who, you know, unfortunately in their prime played in the Negro Leagues and was unbelievably dominant and,
yeah,
you know, only got to play Major League Baseball when he was in his like late 40s. So you could only wonder what he was like back then. But it's important to recognize these players. It's important to recognize what this league meant for eternity. And I implore people, because I would love to be able to do it. I plan on doing it, Chad. I don't know if you have had the experience.
Haven't, show, and I want to go, yeah, to
the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. I feel like it would be such an incredible experience to do that. And I implore anybody that is in the area, if you have the opportunity, to go 100%. What is your thoughts on the Negro Leagues and what it meant and what it means for Major League Baseball?
There's around the history of baseball, and you look at kind of that opening class of the Hall of Fame, it's there isn't any diversity, you know. I mean, you know, Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth, you know, they didn't face anybody of color, you know. And you know, when Dexter Fowler led off in game one in Cleveland of the World Series, that was the first black player for the Chicago Cubs to play in a World Series game, because, you know, the last time they played in 1945, that was 2 years before Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier. So when you talk about Kansas City, you talk about the Negro Leagues, you know, the Cubs actually have a point of history in the Negro Leagues by having Buck O'Neill, the very first Major League Baseball coach of color. And I believe that was in 1961, I believe 61, 62, actually. And that was when he was when they had the collection of coaches, you know, he was just one of them, but it was a big deal. And so they hired him really as a scout, because baseball was changing. But then he also was one of the coaches, and it was a really big step for the Cubs, to add him to their college of coaches. And it was a really big step for baseball. And it's just amazing to think, I mean, you know, our listeners are of different ages, but, you know, in our parents' lifetime, this was a new thing, you know, well into my mom's, you know, adolescence. There weren't any black coaches, and it's a part of our history. We can't forget about that. We can't forget about the fact that they were not allowed. They were not welcome. And from the stories of Jackie Robinson all the way through, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. More than anything, it's a dialogue that needs to happen. But yeah, 100 years, such history. And it's amazing to think what baseball and the record book would look like if those 100 years, if they instead were playing with Major League Baseball, it'd be a much different record book.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note, Chad, that, you know, baseball is still struggling with black representation. Just 8% of players in baseball right now are black. And I think that it is important, and I know Major League Baseball has really tried to make concerted efforts to bring the game of baseball into areas where, you know, there might be kids who are preferring to play football or basketball, yeah, over baseball, and to recognize what a great sport baseball can be for, you know, kids of color, as well as, you know, people who are, you know, that are playing right now, because I think they are underserved in those areas.
It's such a good point.
Great to see more of them. Yep. Playing baseball.
It's such a good point. And we were talking about this before about the Cubs' number one draft pick, first round draft pick, Ed Howard. I mean, what a big deal that was, that this team from the Chicago South Side won the U.S. championship and went on to the Little League World Series. I mean, that made people from the South Side of Chicago, made a lot of kids step up and say, I could do that. I could be that. And now that Ed Howard has been picked by the Cubs in the first round, he's going to inspire even more people. The big barrier for baseball, it's expensive. The equipment's expensive. It's a lot cheaper to pick up a basketball and go down to the corner lot. Baseball is an expensive sport. And you're right. It there's a lot of work that needs to be done. You want the best athletes playing for the best teams, and hopefully we'll see that those percentages continue to increase to represent what really is a beautiful melting pot that is America.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, that is going to wrap things up on this edition of the Friendly Confines. We appreciate it, everybody. Hey, when we come back next week, believe it or not, we'll be actually talking about players playing on the field, at least getting that first week of summer camp in. So it's going to be exciting stuff. So for Chad, I am Ryan. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. See you later.
See you at summer camp, everybody.
Don't let anyone say that it's just a game, for I've seen other teams and it's never the same. When you're born in Chicago, you're blessed and you're healed. The first time you walk into Wrigley.